afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Stafford Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Friday, May 12th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, what a crazy day it is in the markets, and of course, a crazy day in the gold market. We were able to show a positive marking for gold today. Currently in the New York aftermarket trading, we have gold up 360 at 1229.40. The high today was 1232. Silver up 10 cents today at 1651. You have platinum up 2 at 923. You have palladium up 3 at 809. The USDX today was down 0.45 at 99.21. Crude oil was up, though, 0.06 at 47.89. Paper markets today still have some final numbers pulling through. The Dow is down 26 points at 20,892. NASDAQ was up 5 at 61.21. The S&P was down 3 at 23.90. 10-year yield has dropped quite a bit, 0.06, 2.34%. The euro is still there at 109, up 0.60. And, while everyone is still concentrating on the Donald Trump and Comey situation, I just can't figure that one out. I mean, I watched the interview last night with Holter. What's his name?
You're talking about Bill Holter.
Oh, no, not him. Why does that name escape me right now? On NBC, anyway, was the interview with Donald Trump. And, when I hear Donald Trump really should speak more, because, when he talks, it almost kind of reassures me. And I think to myself, those things. But then he goes and does his tweeting. And, then it's like he's starting to pick a fight with the FBI instead of just letting it go. He tweeted, James Comey better hope that there's no tapes of our conversation before he starts leaking to the press. James Comey better hope again that there's no tapes of our conversations. He goes on and says, Trump also suggested he may cancel future press briefings and instead hand out written responses for the sake of accuracy. It's just almost childish anymore. I mean, it's just like kindergarten. It's high school-y stuff. And I wonder what's going to happen next week to override this week's distraction. This week's distraction basically overrode the healthcare debacle The healthcare debacle last week basically took the focus off the lousy tax reform and cuts from the week before. So it's like each week we have these situations that just takes all this other stuff out of the news. And it's just like, is this what we have to live for? Is this what we're going to get for the next 4 years?
Do we really have significant situations every week, or is this a reflection of media hype? I mean, buy me.
But it's like the White House is inviting it. It's like they're inviting it. Just by the way they release things and the way they handle things and so forth, they're inviting it. So I think it's both. But the media does probably take it a little bit further. Of course, the Democrats take it a little bit further than what it needs to be, of course. But I think it's both. I think they're, both.
Yeah, I understand that. That's standard answer.
Both.
Yeah.
Wall Street headline today, bloodbath for retail stocks, roll on. Department stores face serious pressure for a second straight day. I talked a little bit about this yesterday. JCPenney reported lower than expected comparable store sales, sending its shares down 14%. Nordstrom dropped 10% after weak quarterly same store sales. Macy's fell another 2.4%, bringing its loss to more than 18% in the past two sessions following its dismal quarterly report. The less-than-expected 0.4% month-over-month increase in April retail sales, of course, are still stirring fears about the retail sector as well as the economy. The numbers were light again. People don't seem to be spending money despite employment and income numbers being good. It's concerning. And this was from a senior vice president, a comment out of Wedbush Securities in San Francisco. And yeah, it is concerning. It should be. And, you know, if there's no disposable income out there. And we talk about it, and I'm not going to get into it today. But again, just another sign that shows, hey, folks, not good.
Well, then the question becomes, they say people aren't spending despite having good numbers out there, economic numbers. Well, and they wonder why people aren't spending, and I wonder if it's not evidence that the numbers aren't accurate. Maybe the numbers are fudged to a point where they say, oh, everything's going great, and in fact, but on the one hand, they say things are going great, but on the other hand, they're not getting the sales they would expect. Is that an anomaly, or is that evidence that the numbers are exaggerated? They're falsified.
I think
maybe things aren't there.
Yeah. I think the numbers are falsified. And the consumer can't do what Wall Street is doing. They can't go out and borrow, you know, with low rates and buy back their shares to make their stocks go high. You know, that's all based on, you know, you see a lot of these things happening because it's expected that there's going to be $1 trillion of infrastructure spending in the next 10 years. Well, the consumer can't go out he already has. You know, when there's reports that he's close to $40,000 in debt, you know, it's kind of hard for him to spend anymore. So, yeah, the economy is not going to get better. We talked about this before. It's not that these retail stores, the brick and mortar stores, it isn't all just about online competition. It's also about the economy, and people don't have the money. It's not, they're not supporting their local stores. They're not supporting their local grocery stores. We talked last week about, you know, I talked about a major bank going over. I think it was the beginning of this week. I haven't heard that for a while. And in 2016, banks covered by the FDIC reported $171.3 billion in profits. Only five banks failed last year, the smallest number of bank failures in a year since three FDIC-insured institutions failed in 2007. What's more, the banks that failed were truly marginal, counting just 18 branches and a mere $277 million in assets. But what's happening in 2017, so far this year, five banks have already failed, as many as in all of 2016. And I mentioned this earlier too when we first reported on that bank. The banks that are failing are significantly larger. The bank we talked about was Guarantee Bank of Milwaukee. This week, the week before that, it was First NBC Bank of New Orleans, and they had $4.7 billion in assets and 29 branches. So again, we'll have to see how the rest of the year follows. But it's not a good sign. And, of course, you know, we talk about the layoffs from these retail stores. That hasn't filtered through. You know, so, yeah, I the numbers are not going to get any better.
The numbers might get better, but are they going to be realistic?
No, not even the
lying
numbers.
I mean,
the numbers
are here today.
They're not going to be able to fudge. They're not going to be able to lie about the numbers too much longer because it's going to have to show, you know, the reversals.
I've got an article here from the Washington Post. It says, White Americans, Economic Hardships, and Trump's Big Win, What a New Report Reveals. That's the headline. And it starts out, roughly a third of white working class Americans said they have cut back on food or meals in the past year to save money. Now, that's an extraordinary statement. When people cut back on food, all right, that's evidence that people are really tightening their belts. There's a problem here. I mean, food is one of the basic points of life, and people are cutting back on food. A third of the white working class are cutting back on food. That's evidence, you know, that things are not as wonderful as the government might have you believe. Among those who live in the same town they grew up in, only 17% said the quality of life had improved. There's a series of comments here. Most people think quality of life has not improved or perhaps even diminished in during their lifetime if they're in the same town where they grew up in. After Trump's surprise victory, many observers continue to debate whether economic distress or anxiety about race, immigration, and cultural change motivated his supporters. What about government corruption? What about, you know, it's interesting to me that they would. Might be economic distress that might have made people vote for Trump. Anxiety about race that may have made the public vote for Trump. Immigration and cultural change may have motivated people to support Trump. What about people being aggravated with the establishment? What about people believing that the government no longer served the best interests of the people? That's what really moved people. And that's not one of the causes that they list in this article. And it's surprising to me. What else did they say in here? Just go through it briefly. They talk about it's sort of been part of the American dream that you work hard, you get an education, you can get ahead. The fact that the white working class Americans are less likely to believe that, I think, this is a guy, one of the people being quoted here, less, they don't believe that you can work hard, get an education, get ahead. They don't believe in that. The white working class Americans are less likely to believe that. It really shows the dire situation that they believe themselves to be in. Less than half the white working class believes that people who work hard can still get ahead. 61% said they thought the nation's best days are in the past. Well, 61%? Well, this isn't 61% of Americans. This is 61% of white working class. These are not college graduates. These are people that have, you know, standard jobs. And but they think the best days are in the past. And I understand what they're talking about. It's not an unreasonable perspective. I mean, I look back. I remember the 60s and the 50s. And again, in my mind, I was a teenager, whatever, but the world back then seemed to have a fresh coat of paint. Everything looked bright and shiny, and there was a great sense of optimism. People can't, they don't think they can get ahead today in the same sense that we could back when I was a kid. And I think part of the reason for that, I don't doubt for a minute that this is an accurate perception. The first opportunity is not as available for ordinary people today as it was once was in this country. And I think the reason for that, back when I was a kid, a quarter of the people were self-employed. They had little jobs, they maybe fixed shoes, they did whatever, but they had their own little businesses. Now, you can't hardly get your own business. I doubt if it's 1 in 20 that's self-employed. And part of the reason for that is because government has imposed so many regulations that apply equally to multi-million-dollar corporations and to guys that are making, you know, $50,000 a year, that the guy can't go out. You can't start a business of your own. Very difficult to go into business on your own. In part just because a lot of people, I've said this before, they know how to do plumbing, for example, or electrical work, but they don't know how to do all the government paperwork. Right? There's so much paperwork associated with being self-employed right now, but a lot of people who could do the job and do a good job, they can't go out. Well, I think it's part of they can't go out and work on their own. And I think that's part of the reason that a lot of people think their best days are behind us, that there's not as much opportunity today as there was back in the day. It doesn't mean it's not doom and gloom per se. It's just a percentage of the population, but they are talking about the white working class and significant groups. So,
well, Well, you know, when you hear everybody talk about the regulations and everything, they're not talking about the plumber's regulations when he opens his business and go out there. They're talking about these multinational corporations regulations, the Environmental Protection Agency and all their regulations to where these, when they talk about regulations, we kind of relate it to, all the little mom and pop guy can go out there and now start his own business. And it's not those regulations that'll probably be changing much. It's for the big guys. It's for the big corporations. It's the multinational corporations.
And you're saying Trump is going to lighten up on regulations. That's what you're referring to right now, or he plans to?
Well, yeah. I mean, the regulations that they talk about enlightening is for the bankers. It's for the bigger corporations and so forth. Is it really even going to affect the little guy who wants to go out there? And
I don't know that it's going to make things better for the little guy.
No, it won't.
But I think they have made things worse for the little guy over the last 40 years or so. They've just has laid on more and more regulations, and the result is you can't just do your job. You've got to be a full-time government regulation expert in order to open up a small business. And that's not true for all businesses, and it's not true for maybe even a majority of them, but it's true for a percentage.
I don't even think it might be regulations that they've been unable to do it. It's competition. I mean, retail stores, your little mom and pop shops, you get Walmart in there and they just, wreck the town. All these little shops have to close. Your little downtown stores have to close because no one can compete with Walmart. I mean, that's, it doesn't have anything to do with regulations. I mean, what it does have to do is the little mom and pop shops can't get the same, discounts from China as Walmart does and so forth. So, I mean, there's a lot when it comes to the little guy, there's a lot more involved than just regulation. So when we hear regulations coming from government, oh, we're going to make it easier. So that's for the bigger corporations. You know what? They don't make laws and legislation for the little guys.
Not anymore. I don't know if they ever did, but
they never pretend to. They never did.
Yeah.
So one thing I do want to talk about, it might take us into the but again, that those are signs, what you talked about, those are signs in how the standard of living has been brought down in this country to levels that are, I've heard a lot on watching some of these news programs on cable this week. They talked a lot about a banana republic here, and they talked a lot about a third world. Well, you know what? It comes to our standards of living also, not just what they perceive as the government. So, there's part truth, but let's look at it as an economy and our standard of living. But speaking of standard of livings, and we talk about trade and so forth, we had the finance chiefs from many of the world's nations. Well, I think we're going to be going into a break here soon. So,
well, we don't absolutely have to, Melody. We could.
No, we do.
We do?
And we do have to go to a break. Okay. But there's been this is the precursor up to the G20 meeting, that this is the group of seven finance ministers and central banks. They kicked off a two-day meeting in southern Italy. Mnuchin is there, and he talks about the 100-day trade agreement with China, and that's what I wanted to talk a little bit about when we get back.
We can talk about that in a moment when we return to Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Before we get into the group of seven finance ministers, I just want to, because you and I talked about it during the break, was a massive ransomware campaign appears to have affected a number of organizations around the world. Computers in thousands of locations have apparently been locked by a program that demands $300 in Bitcoin. There have been reports of infections in more than 70 countries, including the UK, US, China, Russia, Spain, Italy, and Taiwan. One cybersecurity researcher tweeted that he had deleted many thousands of cases of the ransomware known as WannaCry and variants of that name around the world. He says this is just huge. Another at cybersecurity firm Kaspersky said that the ransomware had been spotted cropping up in 74 countries, and that number was still growing. There were a number of reports that Russia had seen more infections than any other single country. Several experts monitoring the situation have linked the infections to vulnerabilities released by a group known as the Shadow Brokers, which recently claimed to have dumped hacking tools stolen from the U.S. National Security Agency, the NSA. A patch for their vulnerability was released by Microsoft in March, but many systems may not have had the update installed. So this is a pretty big thing, and unlike many other malicious programs, this one has the ability to move around a network all by itself. Most others rely on humans to spread by tricking them into clicking on an attachment harboring the attack code. But by contrast, once WannaCry is inside an organization, it will hunt down vulnerable machines and infect them too. And perhaps this explains why its impact is so public, because large numbers of machines are compromised. FedEx was experiencing interference with some of their Windows-based systems. So they're trying to fix that problem as quickly as possible. Mm. Seems to be a pretty major attack. So, you know, they talk about, just computers at large. You really wonder what systems have they really been able to get into.
They can probably get into any system that's around. Yeah. Virtually anyone, certainly.
Well, I mean, they're not, how many of these government systems have, has it infiltrated and so forth? So,
serious problem, and it's one of the reasons why you have to look at things like Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, and people are seeing that as an alternative banking mechanism. And you have to wonder, for the moment at least, it appears that the hackers are outsmarting the conventional computer operators. You would kind of think that by now, Windows 10, for example, or whatever Microsoft is putting out, or whatever different programs, that they would have worked and been devised in a way where they were no longer vulnerable to hacking. But it appears that the hackers are finding ways to crack into virtually any of the programs, and they they seem to be smarter than the programmers, than the systems analysts that put legitimate programs together in the first place. And if that is true, and they can't really get a handle on the hackers, maybe they can, maybe they will in the next year or two or whenever, maybe they'll figure out how to track them down and throw them in the slammer for 10 years. By the time they get out, we may not even have computers anymore, but they'll be so far behind they won't be able to catch up. If they can't find a way to control these people, I don't see that there's a positive future for something like Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, because they're going to get hacked one way or another. If you know, there was the old Willie Sutton, "Why do you rob banks?" They asked Willie Sutton back in the Great Depression. And he said, "Because that's where the money is." Well, I guarantee you people are going to be robbing Bitcoin and whatever the other cryptocurrencies are available. They're going to do it because it's relatively easy if you are, apparently it appears to be easy if you are a competent hacker. You can do it from the comfort of your own home, or if you want, you can go start your hacking program, your robbery program, who knows, go down to Starbucks and sit there in the Starbucks and don't even have a direct connection that's obvious to your house. I'm sure there's ways of concealing this, concealing your attempt to hack. That, you know, I'm not familiar with it. I never will be. But it's just digital, dangerous. There are no secrets in the internet age. I've said that on this program a number of times, And insofar as that's true, if you can't keep your secrets safe, it's not at all clear that you can keep your digital currency safe. And what this does, again, this is one of these things that takes you back old school. You want to store your wealth. Maybe you're looking for something tangible like gold and silver coins.
Yeah, it just baffles me, the amount of financial transactions that are done on computers, and people just don't think anything about it anymore. Well, and what a great way,
super convenient.
And what a great way for governments to come in and steal your money. Oops, the computers went down. We lost everything. So sorry about that. You know, we had nothing to do with it, but computers went down.
Yeah, it wasn't our fault. Yeah, the hackers made me do it.
Yeah. I mean, it just baffles me. It baffles me why anyone would buy their gold and silver online. It just amazes me. It just amazes me. But anyway.
It's like anything else. Once you get used to it, you get used to buying tennis shoes online. It won't be long before you buy homes and cars online. I assume they're already doing that. I would imagine they're doing.
When I buy a car, I do a lot of my research online. I know how much it costs. I know where I can go. I know what my I know what they're going to offer me, and I know how low I, you know. So, yeah, you can do a lot of research, but I would never buy one online. I mean, you'd have to be, you know. Anyway, getting back to, but I thought that was interesting with as big it is and not a lot of reporting on it. Well, everybody's involved in Comey, so. Finance chiefs around the world have met in Italy. And biggest thing that they wanted, that they started off the meeting, and Mnuchin did miss the beginning of the meeting, but that they pressed the United States not to break a decades-long global consensus in areas such as trade and financial regulation, criticized by U.S. President Donald Trump. Inequality, international tax rules, and cybersecurity headed the official agenda for a group of seven finance ministers and central bankers. Again, it's a two-day meeting. But Trump's threats to end a multilateral approach to policies from trade to climate change dominated the discussions inside the walls of a 12th century Norman castle. They said, "We need a strong United States to lead the global economy and global politics in a sustainable way." And that was from the German finance minister. So, you know, they really are concerned about Trump breaking up their little global economy. And their global politics, their new world order. So it's kind of interesting that that's how that meeting started out. Several officials at the G7 raised concerns about risks to global growth from the Trump administration policy proposals, including tax reform. Mnuchin, who skipped the opening session, told the reporters he was excited about the emerging new U.S. trade policy. He said, I think you probably saw last night we made an announcement of a 100-day economic plan with the Chinese, so I think we are very happy with how we are proceeding on trade. Well, I watched a lot of the news, and I didn't see any comments about a 100-day. This was actually released when the Chinese president was here, their discussion with Mr. Trump, but the 100-day economic plan with the Chinese was pretty hard to find on your local news. But the United States and China have agreed to take action by mid-July to increase access for U.S. financial firms and expand trade in beef and chicken, among other steps as part of the Washington's drive to cut its trade deficit with Beijing. The deals are the first results of 100 days of trade talks that began last month. This will help us bring down the deficit for sure, U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said at a media briefing in Washington. You watch and you'll see. And, of course, the United States ran a trade deficit of $347 billion with China last year. By July 16th, the 100th day after the leaders' meeting, China agreed to issue guidelines that would allow U.S.-owned card payment services to begin the licensing process. China's UnionPay system basically has a monopoly. China will also allow U.S. imports of beef no later than July 16th, and the United States will issue a proposed rule to allow Chinese cooked poultry to enter U.S. markets. I'm not sure I want to eat any Chinese cooked poultry.
Well, you know what really is amazing about that? When you stop to think how cheap that chicken must be in China, if they can afford to export it to the United States, cook it and export it to the United States, you're going to be dealing with what are they feeding those chickens? Yeah. You know, I mean, how do you raise a chicken in Peking, ship it all the way across the Pacific Ocean for somebody to have for dinner in Chicago? How can that compete with the price of chickens? We already grow our own chickens. How can it be cheaper to grow chickens in China, so much cheaper to grow them in China than it is to grow them here in the United States? And it's got to be a lot less costly to raise chickens in China, because if it wasn't, somebody's paying to transport those chickens. They got to be just practically giving the chickens away, and I'm sitting here wondering, what are they feeding those chickens? And I don't care to speculate on that exactly, but it bothers me. You know, come on. Oh, a genuine made-in-China chicken. I don't know. Is that something you really want to eat? You know, I mean, I see garlic bulbs, you know, and they sell them in little tubes and rest, that sort of thing, that are apparently exported from China to the United States. You get, I don't know, six or eight of them in one of these tubes. Clump of garlic, head of garlic, heads of garlic, and the rest of that sort of thing. And I wonder, how can you pay? How can you afford to ship those things all the way across the ocean? Maybe even by air. I don't know how they're moving some of these things, but it is astonishing to me. How can it be cheap enough over there? It's evidence of some sort of extraordinary poverty in China that is not obvious in the reports we hear about China. To me, it is. It's evidence that garlic is so cheap that you can grow it in China and pay for a jet or at least a ship to haul it all the way across the ocean to the United States and still make a profit. It's got to be dirt cheap in China. Chickens apparently are the same way. I think of the pollution in China and whatever. I don't want to eat that food.
Yeah. And that's if it is even poultry. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some sort of testing or so forth, but, you know, I mean, How do you even know it's chicken? You know? So, yeah, no, I wouldn't. You know, there's always that, you know, they have lots of kitty cats over there, or they don't have a kitty cat population over there. But anyway.
You're saying that they, you don't think they can sell chickens that are actually cats in disguise, do you?
I mean, I... Yeah.
What kind of chicken is this? It's got a tail on it. You know? I've got four drumsticks on my chicken.
Anyway, so, and then you have to think about the credit cards. You know, you have Visa, MasterCard. Do you think they're really going to be able to, you know, move their business and processing, you know, so, you know, it's, I don't know. It. We'll see.
What are we doing selling cattle, beef to China? I'm sure that the people who raise cattle in this country, they're saying, well, it's good for business. Yeah, I guess it is. It's increasing demand and whatever. But there's something about this that just makes me uneasy. Why can't we just sell our beef right here in the United States? Do we really have to sell beef into Peking to make a dollar? That's another one of these. I'm not sure what the economics are on this, and I don't know how much money they're getting for the beef, and it may be a luxury item. Yeah. In China, it may be a luxury item, and maybe they are getting a top dollar, maybe even a higher dollar than they get in the United States. I don't know. That might be happening. But still, there's something about this that just makes me uneasy. The idea we're going to sell beef to China. They're going to sell chicken in the United States. Why don't we just raise our own? Why don't they raise their own cows? Why don't we raise our own chickens?
We did export beef to China. But they had they lifted the import ban because the ban was imposed in 2003 due to mad cow disease in from Washington State. So, I mean, we did export to them. China is the top export market for U.S. agriculture products, with the total value of exports rising by more than 1,100% since 2000.
See, that's another problem.
Yep.
How is it that we can't sell anything that has some... I won't say we can't sell anything, but if the top export, at least relative to China, is agricultural products, that reflects a certain amount. People are hungry in China. I get that.
But what's just...
Why don't we sell... How is it that we can't sell automobiles?
But the problem... Even if we stay with agricultural products... I can't recall how long ago it was, probably 2004, 2005, when the U.S. started importing more food than they exported. So I'm thinking, what's the point of exporting food if we have to import it?
Yeah, that's a good
to
idea.
Feed
it's
our
a
people.
Good observation. Yeah.
So it never made sense. So it's all about these trade agreements. It's all about, I don't know what it's all about. What's the point?
Well,
because, you know, other countries can't pay what we pay for the food that we export. So.
Interesting times. We're going to take a break. Be back in a couple of minutes. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
So we're subsidizing the rest of the world together.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from Ms. Shedlock. And the headline is North Korea Threatens China, which is just, you know, another one of those strange stories. China is North Korea's number one ally, their biggest ally. They're named their main trading partner and the rest of that. And China has suspended coal imports from North Korea in response to growing pressure from President Trump to help the U.S. quell Kim Jong-un's aggression and resolve the nuclear standoff. China, again, is trying to encourage North Korea to behave in a more civilized manner. China's also used state media to increase pressure on Pyongyang, that would be North Korea, to halt its missile tests. China will not allow, this is a quote from Chinese publication Global Times, says China will not allow the northeastern region to be contaminated by North Korea's nuclear activities. China, and they warned that China would strike back at any side that crosses the red line and would enact an oil embargo if North Korea conducts another missile test. In response, North Korea has warned that China's reckless remarks about its nuclear program could trigger grave consequences. I don't know what's going on, but I mean, you wonder if the Kim Jong-un, does he have a death wish? Is that what's going on? I mean, you cannot start a fight with everyone. You gotta, if you're going to have a fight, you're going to have a war, all right, have a war. I'm not advocating it. I'm not saying it's a good idea, but you should only start a war with one person. North Korea can't absolutely count on a single ally in all the world. And they seem to be, China was their best buddy, best friend forever. But China and North Korea are becoming adversaries to some degree. And it's something that's on one level surprising. On the other level, maybe it's evidence that China is at least getting some sense. But North Korea is mad. They behave as if they are flat out of their mind. And what do you do about people that are crazy or that appear to be crazy and have nuclear weapons? Legitimate lunatics. Kim Jong-un really does behave, I don't know if it's true, but he does appear to be half crazy. And he has nuclear weapons, and it's the sort of thing you look at him and say, uh-oh, what are we going to do about that, Melody?
Does he have nuclear weapons?
Yeah, they detonate them periodically. They've had nuclear tests. They have yet to send them over the United States. But there is some concern. Some people speculate North Korea has a couple of satellites up in the, you know, rotating around the Earth, in orbit around the Earth, and one or more of them cross the United States periodically. And some people are afraid that the satellites might contain a nuclear device that could be launched from the satellite. Now, I think that's probably not true. I doubt that's true. But I don't doubt for a minute that it's possible. And when the satellite is already there, in theory, if you launch, you've got something like a half hour from when they launch to when the missiles arrive. If they launch from a satellite overhead, you've got minutes from when they launch until a nuclear device explodes, perhaps directly over the nation, and we hear about these EMP strikes and cripples all our computers. It's bad enough we've got the hackers and the people with ransomware and the rest of that. Now we've got maybe people are threatening to shut off all our computers with an EMP strike. I don't know. It's just another one of these reasons why you should be prepared. We live in strange and unpredictable times. Here's another article.
I just want to add something to that. Well, you know what? There was an Intel report about Iran refining nuke delivery system in violation of the ban, and they continue to make strides in perfecting their intercontinental ballistic missile capability. This is something else that this is going to have to be addressed in addition to North Korea, is Iran. And Iran is far more serious and disturbing than North Korea. You know, North Korea could get one off, but, you know, they'd be toast after that. Well, Iran is a little different. And again, there's going to be this is our future, because this is something that is coming our way, whether we like it or not. It will have to be addressed, and I don't think there's a nice outcome when it will be brought to the table to address. So,
well, wars and rumors of wars, Melody.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, you look at it and you just kind of shake your head, and maybe even just ignore it to some degree. For example, what do you do about nuclear war? Where are you going to go? Where are you going to hide? I mean, it's the sort of thing where you pretty much, you almost have to just accept the threat, as in the same sense that we accept the threat. Some people say that one day the sun will, you know, explode, or it's going to turn into a dwarf, a red dwarf or something. I don't know. It's anticipated a million years or more, 10 million years before we see that kind of problem. But there are some things that you just have to accept with this in this world as part of life that could terminate your life at any moment. And you can worry about it, but there's not much you can do about it. So what do you do? I don't know. Unprecedented times. There are things that are happening that have become part of everyday activity, in a sense, everyday thought, everyday threat. You have to accept it. Yep, we might all disappear and be vaporized in a nuclear war. Could happen. Even if they don't get you when it all starts up, what's going to happen to the world if this goes through? If we really wound up in World War III, will anything survive? Even if you live through, they don't nuke your city. Yay, we weren't nuked. Yeah, but where are you going to get your groceries? You're not growing your own in the big city. And, you know, worst case scenario, you're not, we survived the nuclear attack, but will you survive the food shortages that'll follow? This is the sort of thing that really does push you back. Maybe it's time to crack open the Bible and start reading, because maybe you really do need to get on it.
We face many, many challenges, and so many of them will be devastating to many people, whether it be financially, whether it be wars, whether it be whatever. And you're right, bring out the Bible. But one thing we do have to do is we have to keep living our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't stop living and wait for these things to happen. We do have to live our lives. And so you can't let that fear. You know, the more prepared you are, the less fear you're going to have. And be prepared, not scared. And that's why we talk, you know, food and everything else that we talk about. This is what these programs are about, to help educate you. And so it's very important. So we still have to live our lives.
But the thing about it is we have to live our lives in ways that there's no one around to really give us instruction. It used to be, when I talked to James Corbett on the interview this week, he was talking about there was a time when they asked you when you're a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? I mean, that applied in my life when I was a kid. Is what do you want to be when you grow up? You want to be an astronaut or a fireman or a policeman or a scientist, or what do you want to be? Right? Well, you could pick, you could choose an occupation when you were 5 years old and be absolutely confident that that occupation would still be there when you turned 20 or 25. So you could pick an occupation. Say, well, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a fireman. Okay, fine. Could happen, right? Because the society was not changing rapidly. What Corbett was pointing out is right now, you can't be sure that an occupation you choose at the age 5 will even exist in 10 or 15 years. And there is a high probability that you can't choose what you're going to be when you grow up because you're going to be taking a job of a kind that does not even exist when you're 5 or 10 years old. And it's a characteristic of the world we're living in right now, and it's disturbing, it's unnerving, it's not the end of the world, but it is just odd. And it's something that I don't think the species has ever faced before. What are you going to do tomorrow? I don't know. What's the latest invention going to be?
Yeah, most kids you ask at 5, though, when they want to be when they grow up, they'll say something, but they're not going to be that anyway.
You know, I get that,
everybody,
but they could
wanted
be
to
that.
Be, you know.
They could be.
And you won't have as many choices, I agree. You're going to have the military. Well, you can be a soldier. You got the military. But yeah, absolutely.
A robot repairman is what you're going to. Instead of Maytag, you're going to be a robot repairman.
Or a singer. Everybody, all these kids today, if you ask them, you know, they want to be singers and dancers. You know, so yeah, it's a
yeah. That's
changing.
Like I want to be a professional basketball player. That's my dream. I'm going to play professional basketball. No, you're not. I mean, a handful of people will, but it's like singers.
Yeah, I know.
It used to be before we had this mass culture that there would be a singer at some little bar, right? And there'd be another singer at another bar 4 blocks down the street, and there'd be a piano player a quarter mile away and whatever. Right now, we have one singer because we've had, I'm exaggerating, of course, but we have one singer that reaches millions of people instead of 1,000 singers that each reach 1,000 people. We get the best singers that way, I suppose. But there's something lost because only one of us gets to be a singer, where it used to be 1,000 of us could sing. Now only one of us is singing because we've got this mass media and it's all available on the internet, and we can see the best that the world has to offer, and there's something to be said for that. There's a lot to be said for that, but at the same time, maybe there's something to be said for having our singers local.
Well, I think too, a lot of your singers, I don't know how we got, but your singers, I mean, but you have your singing programs. I mean, it's almost the same thing as instead of the corner bar, now it's your TV station, like American Idol, The Voices, Voice, and so forth.
Oh, yeah, it's replacing them. That's my point. It used to be we had somebody singing down the street, and maybe he or she was a good singer, and maybe not so good, but nevertheless, they were singing their life. Now we're watching, I don't know, The Voice or something on television, on the internet, and we've got millions of people that are watching the same singers. And I wonder about this, if it wouldn't be a better world, it might be more human if we had more local singers instead of a handful that reached millions. It would be better to have thousands of singers that reached, you know, hundreds at a time. Maybe. I don't know. But the point is, the larger point is that things are changing so rapidly and unpredictably that the confidence we had when I was a kid that, well, you could choose an occupation, what do you want to be? That was what you would grow up to be. You could do it. You can't make that. You don't have the confidence right now. You don't have the confidence that the job you're doing is going to be here in 5 years, and that's if you're an adult. I mean, how many people can actually sit back and say, "Oh, my job is secured. I'll still be in business. I'll still be doing this when in 5 years from now." Really? I wonder how many people can really count on that. I think all of us are in a state of a certain amount of instability. We're facing a certain amount of uncertainty. And, makes you anxious. It's conducive to anxiety, and it's not irrational. The world is changing, and maybe we're not equipped to deal with changes that come this quickly. And I don't know what you can do about it. I guess you just have to, it's like being on a roller coaster ride. You've got to just throw your arms up in the air and say, "Wee!" The roller coaster goes down the hill. And we hope that it keeps rolling and it doesn't smash into something. But you have to kind of enjoy it and just throw your arms up in the air at times and say, "Wee!" I don't know, is that irresponsible or is that just necessary? And there's no one to answer those questions for us.
Roller coasters always took my breath away. So kind of the same thing, but
the roller coaster world. All right, well, we're out of time for this week, and we want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me away.